Donald Trump is warning Russia to, quote, get ready for a missile attack on its ally Syria, suggesting imminent retaliation for last weekend's suspected chemical weapons attack. Joining me to talk about U.S.-Russia relations and the Trump administration in general is former CIA officer, international expert, and trial lawyer Jack Rice. Hi, Jack. Welcome to the program.
Great to be with you again, Mike. Thank you so much.
Good to have you on here. There is so much to talk about. I want to start here, though, with the impending war that Trump seems to be wanting to have here with Russia or a surrogate through Syria. You've watched what's going on. What's your take on what's happening?
And when I keep watching the president's behavior, one of the things that comes to mind is he may have negotiated a lot of deals in boardrooms. And typically when he's negotiated those deals, he's the biggest dog in the room. And as a result, he's crushed a lot of people smaller than him, negotiated deals with them, and then walked away and left them holding the bag. I mean, that has happened again and again. The real problem that I'm seeing right now is we see these tweeting comments and these other sort of ridiculous from-the-hip statements that sound like you're a junkyard dog or a bully or something. But the real problem that comes with those is that we're talking about real death here. We're talking about war here. We're talking about really horrific ramifications. And so when you start just tossing things out there from the hip without seemingly even talking to the people who actually know what they're doing here, my concern is that this president has decided, you know, this is what I do, this is what I am. Problem is he has never shifted into the man in the Oval Office that everybody sort of hoped he would, even if you disagreed with him. He's never done that. He's continued to be exactly who he is. And the problem is he's not the one who could pay the price if this goes south. It's going to be literally everybody around him.
Now, here in the U.S., we've kind of gotten used to, and I'm unfortunately that's the case, and it's become normal now for the president to just, you know, issue threats that, you know, we know he's probably not going to follow through on, or that are hollow, or that, you know, we know that he doesn't, you know, he just can't mean that, he's lying through his teeth, whatever it is. We dismiss a lot of this. The foreign standpoint, when you start looking at the United States, when the president does this, even if it is Donald Trump, do foreign countries dismiss this the same way that maybe we might, saying, that's just the president mouthing off?
Well, you know, I mean, they're still sophisticated. So, I mean, they're going to look at this and their people will recognize that Donald Trump will say something and it will be an absolute lie. They know that. The problem is you don't know exactly when that is, and this isn't, again, simply a negotiation in the sense that this is not just about $1 million or $1 billion. This could be something far more catastrophic as a result, and in fact, what we're talking about right now is negotiating and playing chicken back and forth with the Russians involving very serious weaponry and our willingness to potentially kill each other as a result. This is not something minor. And so it's really, really easy to take something out of context. It's very, very easy to miss something and to actually believe potentially by somebody that he's actually being serious. And the problem is you don't know that. But again, when you're talking about people dying and about the sort of domino effect that can happen, I mean, just remember, this wasn't that long ago where there was that firefight in Syria between American forces and Russian mercs, where multiple hundreds of Russians were actually killed as a result of that. And there's a lot of questioning as to why that actually happened. There are still bad feelings about that in Russia. I was in country at the time when that was going on. And as a result of that, I think there's still a lot of people talking about what that means.
You talk about playing chicken with the Russians. And I that so much to me sounds like Cold War rhetoric. I mean, did this happen with the Soviet Union during the Cold War that we played chicken with them? And obviously there's the Cuban Missile Crisis, I think of, that comes right to mind. But was this something that regularly went on?
Well, we did do this. I mean, in a lot of ways, if we think historically, and one example is you can talk about the Cuban Missile Crisis, but what that ignores, unfortunately, Americans get a sanitized version of history, and they miss a lot of these issues. It sort of ignores what the Americans were doing in Turkey, just on the southern corner and the southwestern corner of the former Soviet Union, was doing essentially similar things with weapon systems pointing into the Soviet Union. And so, yes, there was chicken back and forth, but frequently when it was being done through surrogates. You know, we were constantly fighting each other through surrogates. We had our peace. We had our government we were supporting versus they had their government that they were supporting. The problem that we're facing with this one is literally direct. I mean, this is face-to-face. Now, what we do have in place is we do have a communication system in place right now, ideally designed that if U.S. forces and Russian forces are both flying or operating in Syrian space, that they can be in contact with one another to make sure they don't actually touch upon one another, that they don't inadvertently take out one another when we're trying to do something else. But the problem we're talking about here is this isn't about that. This is literally the president saying, they're coming in, we're going to take them out. We have Russians in response saying we can take them out and hit them at their source, meaning the Americans at their source. And so when you start seeing rhetoric like this, you have to start questioning what's going on. And I think what's critically important is that there needs to be reasonable players at the table. And what I've been seeing is you're not seeing reasonable coming out of the White House. And I mean that legitimately. One simple analogy, or at least one example of it, is in this apparent trade fight that's going on between the Americans and the Chinese, purposely put together by this president. If you take a look at who the reasonable people in the room are trying to, like, calm things down, it's President Xi. It's the Chinese president. It's not the American. It's not this president. And the same thing seems to be going on with the Russian issue right now in Syria.
You know, Trump seems to want to have it both ways. He keeps saying, I am the toughest president ever on the Russians, which I think a lot of the press snicker at, thinking about a lot of things that have happened in the past with other presidents. But then he also says, we have great relations with Russia. We have great relations with Putin. I mean, is it safe to say right now that U.S.-Russia relations are at the lowest point since the Cold War?
Yes. Without question, they are. I mean, actually, the president said they were worse than the Cold War. That isn't true. But if you go back to at least the 90s, certainly with the fall of the wall and sort of the relationships, which were actually shockingly close for a period of time, this is worse than anything we have seen in a good 15, 18, 20 years, for sure. So there is no doubt there. But again, if we look at this president's behavior, and again, this is something I am not seeing in the media right now, and it should be in the media. One of the reasons that this shocking attack that the Damascus regime actually carried out against its own people took place, I think, is partly due specifically, in fact, to this president saying, we're pulling out of Syria. This idea that the Americans are going to walk away from this issue, walk away from the region completely and simply let it go, what that does is that gives the perception from the Syrian point of view that all bets are off. They can do exactly what they want. And sadly, that's exactly what has happened, because what you're seeing right now is the Syrian government, the regime out of Damascus, has been in basically mopping up operations, taking huge swaths of territory back from ISIS and other groups, and then targeting those other groups and crushing those other groups, including the Kurdish groups that the Americans were supporting and the Americans have walked away from. And so this sort of extreme behavior by the Syrian regime is due in part to this president's statements, which came completely out of the blue, even to the Pentagon, about we're going to be pulling out of Syria. So he bears some responsibility for that, and yet nobody seems to be calling him on it, and I don't know why.
Well, I think the press has asked Sarah Huckabee Sanders about it a couple times, and she's just sidestepped the question, saying that, oh, the bad actors here are the ones that are responsible, the kind of response you might expect. But Trump has been, again, running his mouth, and that seems to be the problem. He's violating his own principles here by saying, I'm not going to telegraph what I'm doing. First, he telegraphs that we want to pull out of Syria, and then he telegraphs saying the missiles will be coming. Does that compromise the mission if Trump sends one, and could that backfire on us?
Well, it's interesting because, actually, Trump was criticizing President Obama for telegraphing his behavior in Syria. And he went after him really aggressively on exactly this, right? I mean, he did.
Right.
So the idea that he's going to turn around and telegraph his behavior is, it's interesting. I mean, that's the hypocrisy of it, of course. The idea in general is that you might want to telegraph your behavior if the purpose is to change somebody else's response or their behavior, as essentially, this is a threat that we would like to pull back from, but we want to lay it out there so you know it's coming, so maybe your behavior will change. But the problem is when you look at how this president tweeted American foreign policy in 128 characters, the way he did it, the problem is it doesn't give room for anybody to change behavior. It basically is a 10-year-old boy with some really expensive toy that he's going to come around and show everybody and show how cool he is. And that's what this is. This doesn't do anything positive to put the Americans in a better position. It simply apparently is designed to make Trump feel better about himself. I'm not really sure. That's really one of the things that I think a lot of people at the Pentagon right now are scratching their head about.
Yeah, the Pentagon, from a military standpoint here, are they... What should they be concerned that Trump has said this and that might really screw up the mission? I mean, I'm sure there's a contingency plan, you know, for just about everything sitting there. Does this change it? Does this make it more risky for the U.S. to do something like he's proposing?
Yes, Mike. I mean, it's a great question because in the end, the problem that we have here is we have a president who's decided he's going to go down his own path. He's not listening to his experts. He's not listening to his military personnel, his diplomatic personnel, his intelligence personnel, because he decides that viscerally he knows more than everybody else. Why? Because he's Donald Trump. Not because he actually has the information, not because he knows the players, not because he knows the intricacies of the game. He doesn't know any of those. He's just deciding that he knows because he knows. That's about the equivalent of saying that America is the best country on the planet, not because the stats say that it's not because there's something that can prove that we are, but because it is. It just is because it is. Well, guess what? That isn't good enough when it comes to that concept. It certainly isn't good enough when you're talking about being the leader of the so-called free world to be able to simply do what you do because you're you. There's a real problem when that's actually where we have come.
We're speaking with Jack Rice. We're talking about Donald Trump, obviously, Syria, Russia, missiles, all that kind of good stuff. I tell you what, Jack, we're going to take a break because there's a couple more topics I want to get into after the break. I want to talk about the raid that happened on Trump's lawyer, and I know you've got some interesting observations on that. And then we had the announcement today that Paul Ryan is not running for re-election and what that might do to politics in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Jack Rice along here with Mike McEntee on the Mike McEntee Show on AM 950. We'll be back in a few minutes.
So hold my hand, I'll walk with you, my dear. The stars creak, ashes...
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. Even though Auto Technical is a small nonprofit, we have helped more families with transportation than any organization in Minnesota. Since 1994, we have reconditioned donated vehicles so they have a higher tax benefit. Call Richard at 612-919-5526. 612-919-5526 or autotech.org.
The fine folks at Common Good Books will help you find the perfect book for you or the book lover in your life. Find a huge selection from a locally owned and independent bookseller in the Twin Cities. They are always bringing in top authors from around the globe for special in-store events. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Find Common Good Books at 38 South Snelling Avenue in St. Paul or shop online at commongoodbooks.com.
Hi, it's Tom Hartman. You know, Continental Diamond is special for a lot of reasons. The owners are Jimmy and Helene Pessis, a husband and wife team who had a dream to open their own store more than 30 years ago. They've built a business that is the gold standard. The readers of Minnesota Bride Magazine have named Continental Diamond the best jeweler for the last 7 years. Why? Amazing, friendly, no-pressure customer service, a selection of fine diamonds and design jewelry unlike anywhere else, and the fresh-baked chocolate chip cookies are pretty great, too. Continental Diamond in St. Louis Park and at ContinentalDiamond.com.
Downtowner Woodfire Grill in St. Paul is a perfect choice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week, offering daily fresh seafood specials, fire-roasted meats, exquisite pizza, and half-price bottles of wine on Mondays and Tuesdays, except on Xcel Energy Center event nights. Once you experience their cozy fireside dining, extensive wine list, and bar, you'll be back for more. Gift certificates available, located at 253 West 7th Street with plenty of free parking, or online at downtownerwoodfire.com.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show. We're having a great conversation here with Jack Rice. We've been talking about the big stories that are going on. Syria and Russia, we just chatted about. But the other big story that, of course, broke this week is the one that where Trump's lawyer, Trump's personal lawyer, was his offices and home were raided by the FBI. Trump reacted to this quite angrily and was promising all sorts of things that would happen because of it. Jack, I'd like your reaction to A, the raid there, and B, the way that Trump reacted to it.
This is astounding. I think the fact that the president reacted at the level that he did, dare I say this, reflects just how serious it is. When I first heard about it, what I thought to myself was, I've seen multiple investigations taking place, Mueller's, but this one, frankly, is not Mueller's. It's something else.
Right.
Everything is relatively peripheral to the president. This is about as close to the inner circle as you're going to get. This is as close to the president as anything has touched anything at this point. To go after Mr. Cohen, he's been his personal lawyer for more than 10 years. He's been heavily involved in not just the election process, because there's a lot of allegations out there back to 2016 and 15, even as the election was starting to ramp up, but long before that, including a bunch of business dealings in places like Moscow, in the Republic of Georgia, in Baku in Azerbaijan, some of the other areas of the world that I think could be very troubling to this president. And there's one big point that the president kept jumping up and down about, saying that the attorney-client privilege is dead. Let me be clear. First of all, it isn't. And number two, and most importantly, the attorney-client privilege does not exist if they're committing crimes. That's the issue that I think is on the table right now, and that's the issue that could open this up. Because remember one point. One of the first people indicted and one of the people convicted during the Watergate scandal was President Nixon's personal lawyer. That's critical
right.
to remember.
That's right. Is there something here that they might find that might be an impeachable offense for Trump? I mean, that's what a lot of people are wondering. I mean, this seems to be other things.
Here's the thing. We got to understand one piece of this, is that impeachment is not a criminal procedure. It's a political one. And
right,
so the
I understand.
Answer is there, frankly, there may technically be, if you wanted to push it out, there could be something already in the works when it came to that issue based upon the president's behavior already. Now, is there more potentially out there? Let's let the investigation come to an answer. But that's a political question. And at this point, it seems clear to me that because the Republicans control the House, there will not be impeachment, no matter what you see, unless it's so horrific that the Republicans have decided that if I continue to hold on to this president, he's going to pull me down. It's not about what the president does. It's not about what happens to the country. Dare I say it, it seems to be, according to the behavior of the House members, that if I'm going to lose my election, then I'm going to have to look at this differently. Now, I guess the question is are there indictable offenses? Could the president be indicted for behavior that he was involved in allegedly prior to his becoming president? The answer to that is yes. There are civil cases that are sitting out there that are still opening up that actually give those civil litigants the right to depose this sitting president just the way that President Clinton was deposed back when he was president, which ultimately rolled out in the blue dress. That was the issue they started going after him about, was this obstruction piece, his lying to investigators, his lying to during depositions. I mean, I dare I say it, the process is still early. It may seem like this has been going on for a long time, but civil litigation, criminal investigations that are international and complex in scope, this is going at breakneck speed. But we can say one thing. Bob Mueller and his team are probably the best on the planet. They know how to do this like nobody has probably ever done this. And if they come up with something, it is going to be airtight.
Now, one of the targets of Trump's ire has been Mueller. He's been denigrating him on Twitter again and again. The question comes up is, you know, if you don't like him, why don't you fire him? His White House press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, says that he can. The president thinks he can. Can he?
We are talking about this sort of at the break, you and I, and the short answer is yes and no. I mean, technically, what he would have to do is he would have to have the working attorney general, assistant attorney general, deputy attorney general, who's in charge right now, fire him himself. So, in other words, what would likely happen, and this would be my expectation at this point, if he tried to fire Mueller right now, he couldn't do it directly because technically he wasn't the one who appointed him. It would have to be done by that person at Justice. So he would have to have somebody at Justice who would be willing to do this. But the problem that comes with that is that generally these people are career professionals. And the idea that you would actually fire somebody who at this point has already indicted 19 people. He has 4 convictions. He has multiple operations. And the people who work for him are literally the best the Bureau and Justice may have ever produced, ever. And they're all working in the same room. And the problem is the person who's going to be in that spot to fire Mueller at Justice, that person will know all of them. And so the idea that you're going to fire that guy, I think, would be not just political suicide, but potentially historical suicide, in the sense that you don't want to be on the wrong side of history. And the president may actually have a hard time finding somebody with that kind of experience, capability, and connection, and in senior positions at Justice, who wouldn't do this. Because I don't mean to keep going on, but remember this piece. The whole Cohen piece, as an example, what happened was Mueller apparently came across a piece of evidence that may have been outside of the Russian investigation. He went to Rod Rosenstein at Justice Department. The Justice Department went to New York in the Southern District of New York, went to the U.S. attorney, who actually recused himself because he was a Trump appointee and supporter, who said, you know what, we should make sure somebody independent does this. It bounced back to Justice. They took that to the FBI and to a judge to get search warrants, and those warrants were issued by an independent judiciary. And so what we have is a lot of people who are really good at what they do, who were professionals and were serving this country and sacrificing their life when this president was on Howard Stern talking about grabbing all sorts of things. Those people are starting to see that they need to outlast this president, and I think they're starting to turn when it comes to those issues.
Now, a little bit ago, we were talking about impeachment, and you were saying, of course, it wouldn't happen with this Republican Congress unless something catastrophic happened. But some signs today that this Republican Congress may not be long for this world. Paul Ryan, the House Speaker, decided that he is not going to run for re-election. His heading for the exit kind of signals that the 2018 elections are probably not going to go the Republicans' way. What's your take on what he's doing and jumping out right now?
You know, that's a great question. And actually, you started the segment earlier on sort of about a lot of people are starting to make predictions here. I think it's going to come down to one point, whether the Democrats show up. It depends upon who shows up, because what we're seeing right now is that there are more Republicans who have decided to, quote unquote, retire this time around than any time since at least 1952. So we're going back now, 70 years just about. And that's an extraordinary number of, quote unquote, retirees. At the same time, you're seeing the strength of liberals, progressives, Democrats who seem to be emboldened right now. And the question is whether they're going to show up. I think there's a lot of Republicans who are feeling pretty dark about where they are right now. But let's see what happens when they show up. When the election takes place, remember, there's been so much gerrymandering across the country. There are multiple cases in the Supreme Court, North Carolina, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, others, that have manipulated the votes so Republicans can win at almost any cost. It's going to be very difficult to flip more than 20 seats in the House of Representatives. But of course, and this is maybe the major point, is that the only way likely this president would ever be impeached is if there's a democratically controlled House of Representatives, because they're the one who start that process.
Now, one more thing on this. I know we got to go, but this has already set off a power struggle within the Republican conference in the House. We got the majority leader, Kevin McCarthy, and the majority whip, Steve Scalise, both looking at the top job. And rank and file Republicans are debating whether it'd be best to have a race now or let it linger until November. I mean, I look at this and say, this could really be this could be a soap opera backstabbing little thing that happens between now and the elections, and could be a real distraction for Republicans between now and then.
Well, I think the other part that's going to be really interesting here is when you take a look at both of these potential new speakers. This could be like the primaries when it comes to Republican primaries. They may both be fighting to the right in order to grab that base. The real question that's going to happen when you watch this fight between these two is that this is going to show who's controlling the Republican Party. Are these Trump people, or are they more conservative, traditional Republicans? And I mean fiscal Republicans, international Republicans, domestic Republicans. That's going to be the interesting point, because they're trying to figure out how they lead the Republicans into the primaries or into the midterms. And that's going to be really interesting. They've got a lot on their plate. But you know what? I mean, they took the presidency. They control the majorities in both the House and the Senate right now.
We've been speaking with Jack Rice, always an enlightening conversation. You can find more of what Jack writes over at jackrice.net. Jack, I appreciate your time today. It's always great to talk with you.
We certainly pack a lot in.
Yeah, we did. All right. Well, I'm sure we'll have more to talk about next time.
Yes, sir.